Good morning, everyone. We're going to continue today with the Platform Sutra. We actually haven't gotten into it as far as the actual teaching. Although the life of the sixth patriarch, Eno, this is his teaching, and it is the only teaching that's called a sutra outside of the words of the Shakyamuni Buddha. This was the deep respect that this has been held. And the sixth patriarch, if you look at our lineage chart, you see what a remarkable human being he was. What a remarkable Buddha. Virtually all of the lines come through him. You see on the one side you have the great, where the Soto school came from. The other side, the great, what he called the horse, the wild horse, Basso, see? Who was amazing with 139 successors. But what an amazing teacher this sixth patriarch is. And of course, we went through his biography, and it is included as an autobiography in the sutra. The beginning is his introduction as to his background. He was an illiterate, see, whose father had been a government official, who somehow or another fell out of favor, see, and was banished, and died. Well, the sixth patriarch was very, very young, leaving the sixth patriarch and his mother, you know, destitute, great poverty. And he grew up, you know, gathering firewood in the forest and selling it in the village. And you can imagine what a meager existence they had. See? And he heard the Diamond Sutra, see. In one of his deliveries, he heard somebody quoting, see, the Diamond Sutra, and he was immediately struck by it. What does this mean? A great karmic relationship. And he asked, where did you hear this, see? And he said it was at the fifth patriarch's monastery. And through a series of fortuitous events, he was concerned of what to do with his mother. Somebody gave him enough money so that his mother could be taken care of, and so that he could then go and go in pursuit of his practice. Now, when we look at his story, and I'll tell you the truth, what triggered my interest again in this was that Bill Porter, or Red Pine, has a new book out called The Platform Sutra. We have them downstairs in our bookstore. But when I started to actually go through this, I had some questions about some of the translations, some of the wording. And don't ask me why I would even challenge it, because I can't at all. If I need to read any Chinese, I have to go to Mushoku, see? And but what I do know is that the teaching, as I have received it from my teacher, you can see where there are inconsistencies or there's awkwardness in the way that it's phrased. And in some instances, I think the words, and of course we know that when Bodhidharma, see, came from India to China, he pointed directly at the mind of the student. See, and what mind are we talking about here? We're talking about the enlightened mind. We are talking about Buddha. We're not talking about the historical figure of the Shakyamuni. It was Shakyamuni, see, who realized Buddha. See, Buddha simply means the enlightened mind. See, the enlightened mind. And the sixth patriarch, see, is the sixth patriarch from the great Bodhidharma. And Bodhidharma's teaching was outside of words and phrases. It means it was concept-free. It isn't something that you can understand. And the whole point to the Diamond Sutra, to make it very simple. See, and this is what he heard. And this is what he immediately resonated to. No perception of a subject. Now, those of you who sit here on a regular basis and have been through the training, you know what to do now. Samadhi. Enter into samadhi. What is the state of samadhi? Non-distracted awareness. Don't allow your mind to be distracted. Don't sit there, though, actively trying to suppress thoughts. Because, see, that's not the state of non-distracted awareness. That's a highly agitated state of trying to force something to stop. See, make it very simple. Simply be here. Simply listen. When the mind activates and it pulls you away in a thought, as soon as you can, come right back to here. The great Fa Yen said you burn through the flow of the egocentric mind with the samadhi of now. See, this now. See, so as we go through this, see, again, try always to listen from the state of samadhi. And maybe we'll bump into this samadhi again in here with what the sixth patriarch is going to talk about. In the Diamond Sutra, what he heard is there is no perception of a subject. That means that you don't experience something behind your eyeballs. You don't experience yourself there. And we all do. We all do. That's why we're here. And all sentient beings do in the delusional state. But the Diamond Sutra says that thing that you feel is behind your eyeballs, see, in some place in between your ears, you know you have this sense of you there. Buddha said, no perception of a subject. That has to be dropped. Can you imagine? What is that like? See, well, Buddha begins to tell us. He says, and no perception of an object. That means if there is no subjective self sitting there, you're not going to experience an object in front of you. See? Then least you think that means that you go brain dead. And in the argument here with the six patriarchs, see, the Southern School and the Northern School, there must have been a school that tried to suppress everything, that tried to hold and block and blank out everything. That's not what Zazen is. See, it's an amazing thing. It is not annihilation. It is not extinction. See, not at all. Buddha said, no perception of a subject. Behind your eyes, see, if that illusion, and it is an illusion, and I told you, even modern physics, physiology, is beginning to realize that that is an illusion, that the illusion of separation, because they can't find any system to measure where what you perceive, the act of perception, where that breaks, where it starts. There's just an amazing process that goes on. Buddha says it. No perception of a subject, no perception of an object. And then just to make sure that you don't slip in to extinction, into a void, he says, perform meritorious deeds. And the most amazing thing about this teaching, meritorious deeds, freed from the subject, see, this is what it means to perform good. See? And then you literally can take care of the universe you inhabit in a totally different way. This should be so obvious. See, this should be so obvious. This is what he heard. See, and he immediately resonated to it. And of course, we know the story. See, then we come to his actual teaching. And in these translations, it's kind of an interesting thing. I found when I actually started to look for this, yeah, and shift. We don't suffer too much here. See, I have actually four books on the Platform Sutra. See, I have the Sutra of Wei Ning that Tom Cleary did in 1969. And in that, his use of the language is rather interesting. He brings it up into a real contemporary type. And obviously, he streamlines, he edits out much of it. We have the Platform Sutra by Red Pine or Bill Porter, and this is 2006. And he's somewhat meticulous in his use of the language, and yet, in some sense, some of the usage is a little awkward. And I'll point that out when we get to it, where I think it's awkward, and where I think it makes it more difficult for us here, particularly in the United States, and most of us have come through the Japanese form. So we're used to talking about things in slightly different ways. See. And then we have the Platform Sutra of the Sixth Patriarch, and this is by Philip Yampolsky. And this was done in 1969. And this is a very scholarly work. And it has a marvelous introduction. And this is what I got caught in, because I was going to try to prepare, you know, the joke of me preparing. But he has this marvelous introduction. He goes into all of the stories and all of the struggles that scholars have. And you can see that there's been a considerable a acquiring of new information and new knowledge about these folks. But he does get into whether or not this is actually the teaching of the sixth patriarch, or was this something that later monks in the lineage tried to establish their credentials and their lineage, trying to hold the sixth patriarch up as a sixth patriarch against those who were challenging it. See, there was the great Shinsui, and some people try to say, well, he is the legitimate holder. See, and the point is, and I once asked Roshi about this when I first saw the sixth patriarch, and I think it was probably Yampalsky, or it could have been, the third one is the Sutra of Hui Neng by Price and Mu Lam. I'm not quite certain which one of them. And I was reading it, and somebody said, oh, why do you want to read that? That's a false sutra. That's not real. And I was kind of shocked because I sort of liked it. Don't ask me why. I couldn't understand it, but I liked it. So I asked Roshi. I said, well, Roshi, he saw me with the book. I said, it's a false doctrine. He said, who cares if it says the truth? And it says the truth. Who cares whether it's false? Who cares whether he wrote it? It's immaterial. He said, are these living true words? Do they lead you to the Dharma? Then it doesn't matter who wrote them. See? So here we have the four. All of you, particularly those of you who are sort of, have sort of a scholar's leaning, I recommend getting the books. It's kind of fun to look at the history. Roshi would be shocked to hear me say something like that, see? But anyway, we start with his teaching after we go through. There's this long autobiography, sort of setting the stage. I think needlessly bringing up a rivalry where there is no rivalry that exists. We talk about now the southern and the northern schools. We talk about direct realization or the gradual. The fact of the matter is, in his own words, the sixth patriarch says, in the Dharma, there is neither gradual nor direct. See, people are slow, see, like myself, and there are the quick. And that's the only difference. And if we take it on a gradual basis, but we actualize it, it is no difference in the fundamental level of being than those who can catch it in the blink of an eye. Now, are there those quick ones? Well, the sixth patriarch seemed to be pretty quick. So he didn't spend but a matter of months working in the rice cleaning shed, grinding rice, see? And he had transmission, and he was a lay practitioner. He wasn't a monk. It was later, see, when he finally came out of hiding, see, to express the Dharma, that he was ordained. So again, his story tells us something. First off, as far as I'm concerned, there may have been ulterior motives. There may have been these people, these monks, who were trying to further, maybe simply to hold their teacher's lineup. And maybe at the time, it was a way, see, of gaining position and merit for themselves. See, I come out of this great line. This other line is not so good. And in it, certain dialogues, see, have been assigned to the sixth patriarch. And I have found some of that a little bit petty in his attacks. I can't imagine that he would stoop to these kinds of things. I think these were words that were put into his mouth by men of a lesser nature. We see this all of the time. We can look and we can watch what is happening in the United States to Buddha Dharma, to already see the deterioration in a very short time. People simply don't want to put in the work that's necessary. Now, the sixth patriarch, though, points out that a lot of hard work is simply misdirected. It's a lack of understanding. But also, part of that has to do with karma. See, because the Buddha nature that we're talking about, the enlightened mind that we're talking about, is sitting right here, right now. And it's functioning perfectly. And the sixth patriarch will stress this over and over again. There is no difference between an enlightened being, an ascension being in delusion, except for upside down thinking. But that upside down thinking means that rather than living in an unfettered world, rather than frolicking forever with no boundaries, free of fear and anxiety, we live in a nightmare world. See, of anxiety, greed, there's anger, and the ultimate fear of death. See? So that upside down, while it sounds like it's not much, see, the consequences of it, see, are terrible. That's what they call samsara. The samsara is the manifestation of the Buddha mind in the state of delusion. See, we sit like this. We come to retreats like this simply because we're neurotic. See, how do we break free from this conditioned mind? That's what we have to do. And in like all habits, habits are difficult to break. Depending upon the nature, nicotine, drugs, alcohol, terribly difficult to break. But attachment to the self makes all of those addictions look puny. The other night when we talked in the verse by the great Setchel, he talked about his 20 years of struggle. And he said, how difficult. Going down, see, into the dragon's lair for you, see. It's an interesting thing. Once we become awake, we have done this for all sentient beings. There is nothing outside of our universe, if we can see this. Anyway, here we go. The sixth patriarch says, I have come here today because I have a connection of many lifetimes with you officials, clerics, and lay people. See, we're all here because cause and effect, karma. One of the old Chinese masters said that if you want to know how you recycle lifetime after lifetime after lifetime, and even when I say this and when you hear these words, don't try to conceptualize what that means. See, just accept the words much as if we were broadcasting seeds on fertile ground. See, if the ground, see, is rich in nutrients, right temperature, right moisture, the seeds sprout. See, and here we're hoping, see, that the temperature, the nutrients, the heat, the hazy moon will allow, see, this enlightened mind, this Bodhi mind, to sprout, to flower. Karma, all things are produced by causes. There isn't any fixed entities out there. You are not a fixed entity, although because of the way we perceive through the six senses, see, we see and we experience ourselves as separate and solid. That's this thing I'm talking about behind your eyeballs. You feel that you're there. The truth of the matter, it's not that way. See, it is a process of continuous change. Downstairs, we got little kids running around. They were babies just a short time ago. Soon, some of them will be teenagers, and from teenagers to adults. And you will never, ever see the moment of change, but you can't deny that the change is continuous. See, and that's what you are. Actually, in the Avatamsaka Sutra, it says, the course of one day, we go through transformation of rising and settling, if I want to put it another way, of birth and death, 6,400,099,100 and something. And again, who knows? If you want to figure that one out, talk to Doman and see, he might have a handle on how they can count it that much. What I always say about that, my samadhi has never been deep enough that I can make that count. But what I have been is deep enough to know that it really goes fast. And the fact that our lives are shifting and drifting away from us at such a rapid rate is part of the suffering, the anguish, because we feel separate in a certain sense. I remember when I was in grad school years and years ago, they had, and it was during that period of time when, you know, the fad was every new theory, scream therapy, tea therapy, shout therapy, nude therapy, you know, they had everything going. And the one was to step back from your life. step back from your life. And I was always intrigued by that. Step back from your life and take an accounting. By the time you take the accounting, you're way downstream. You have taken accounting of nothing. See, of nothing. You have to stay totally current. You have to stay awake here. The fact that we sit here, just like the six patriarch, karmic connections from past lifetimes. The old Chinese master said, if you can think out from your core 1,000 relationships, this is the group that we recycle through. We recycle through. We recycle through. See, it's not the first time, see, that we have done this. He said, this teaching has been passed down by the ancients. It isn't something I discovered by myself. See, I haven't made this up. In this day and age, we have people who make it up all the time. And if you're at all beginning to mature and see something in the practice, you can see how foolish that is. You can't make up anything about the Buddha nature. Any kind of contrivance is simply a contrivance. The point is to stop the doing mind. See, but we don't stop the doing mind. That's the conditioned mind that wants to accomplish something. Those of you who have just finished, what was it, a weekend ago, see that we were in Sesshin. The frustration, see, the frustration of, I've got to hold it this way. Why am I slipping off? Why am I going back into the daydream world? See, you cannot force it. See, force what? You can only play in your own egocentric mind with force. But this is a very, very subtle. Then you can use that understanding as an excuse to do nothing. And that's Buji Zen. And our great Dharma grandfather, Yasutani, Buji Zen is dead Zen. See, you have to make the right effort of no effort. Now, how do I do that? I simply apply myself to my practice. I allow this egocentric mind, the ruminating mind, some call it the rational mind, but it's not rational. Bodhidharma referred to it as the mind of passion. See, passion meaning I want to grasp or I want to reject. And you allow that just to spin. You recognize the thought, but you go to your practice. And a gap builds. See, there is a place of stillness. I think the six patriarchs will talk about that, see. And that's the state of non-distracted awareness. And pretty soon, the thought comes up. You recognize the thought. There's the thought. But I don't develop the thought. I don't go into the fantasy world. See, I stay focused where? Now. See, this is the only reality, now. And this now, which is pure awareness, see, is the center of the universe. That's where you are. You will never be outside of that now. There is no practice out there. And each moment is the universe in its entirety. You must see that. And that will come naturally in your samadhi. See? He said, but if you wish to hear this teaching of the ancients, you must listen with pure minds. He said, and if you wish to get rid of your delusions, you should understand it as past generations have. See, now again, here, let's refocus and see how simple the teaching is. Pure mind, if you're thinking in a Judeo-Christian sense of purity, that's not purity at all. What terrible distortions come in that kind of rigid ethic or morality? See, you can do great harm. And you'll rationalize it away that you are maintaining, see, a pure state. That's the insanity we have in the Middle East now. It's the insanity we have here whenever you see any of the great injustices that go on. The purity that he's talking about, purify your mind. You guys can do it now. Just sit here. Become very clear. Don't wander off. Stay in the samadhi. Non-distracted awareness, see, of this state now. This is the pure mind. And this is how the past generations have done it. This is the entrance, see. And we have to cultivate the stability of this samadhi, see, until the delusional mind. Literally, Dogen says, body and mind drop away of themselves. Then, the great teaching of the Diamond Sutra, no perception of a self. See, this happens naturally if you're in this pure mind. Wei Neng then yelled out, good friends, are you in the pure state? Are you in the state of non-distracted one? He shouts out, good friends! He said, you already possess the prajna wisdom of enlightenment. See, don't worry. See, don't get trapped by the egocentric mind, the delusional self that tells you, I can't do it. I'm not good enough. He immediately says the first thing, you've got it. He said, but because your minds are deluded, meaning that you're caught in your thinking mind, your picking and choosing mind, your judging mind. He said, because your minds are deluded, you can't understand by yourselves. Well, there's a Buji Zen that's a kind of popular thing. Well, I'll just listen to my inner voice. Your inner voice talking to you, that's your delusional voice. That's your picking and choosing. See, that inner voice is the great stillness. See, but that isn't a dead vacuum. See, that's a dynamic state of being. See, he's saying here that when you free yourself from that ruminating mind, that mind that discriminates self from others, which I've said this over and over again, and I'm trying to get make sure we tie this. We talk about the three poisons. You can talk, Buddha Dharma is always right in every sentence, in its entirety. See, the delusional state of ignorance is the state that experiences yourself as separate. And that experience of separation is what gives rise to the insanity of the world that we live in. That's what makes us feel unfulfilled. That's what makes us hungry for something that we feel is lacking. Unfortunately, in the world, see, of the egocentric self, you can never fulfill that. The old master has said, that's trying to fill an empty stomach by looking at a picture of a rice cake. It can't be done. You can't understand by yourself. You need to find a truly good friend to show you the way to see your nature. See, that's why, you see, in lineage practice, that's what's so important. If it isn't true lineage, meaning a teacher who has completed their training, their practice, with an enlightened teacher who received it from another enlightened teacher, if it's somebody putting together their own personal agenda, that's all they're going to do is lead you into the exercise of their personal agenda. We do this because it makes it interesting for me. See? And the point is that each one of us is the path. The sixth patriarch already says this. And the funny thing about this, you know, I'm still stuck on not wanting to talk. And it's seeming like I should say the same thing over and over again. And that's what it is. Whatever I pick up, it's just saying the same thing over and over and over and over. And why? Because we don't get it. He said, make it simple. Get it right away. See, you're it. You're it. See, now, don't be caught in the ruminating mind. Good friends, Buddha nature isn't different for the ignorant and the wise. It's just that people are deluded or awake. When people are deluded, they're ignorant. When they wake up, they become wise. Upside down thinking. Once the process is reversed. Roshi would say this about this egocentric mind, this mind of discrimination. We have to be very careful, because in this enlightened state, this state of non-distracted awareness, this Buddha mind, this is your true nature. See, you can discriminate, but with absolute precision. In the delusional state, your discrimination is based upon ignorance. And you constantly then are in a state of conflict. See, there's always controversy. See, I want this. You might get that too much. Push away, push away. Grasp, grasp, see, egocentric mind. See, you watch the gyrations of the samsaric world going around you. Listen to the insanity, see, of what we're involved in as a nation. This is our karma. This is in your mandala. See, look at our indifference in a funny way. See, to the lives that are being shattered, not just American lives, see, life. There is nothing outside of this Buddha mind. And this has relevance only for us. In that if I choose not, see, if I choose not to look at this from the perspective of the enlightened mind, then I stay in delusion. And see, and I can't see the damage that's done when I cause harm. Roshi said of this delusional mind that it is a miserable master. And isn't that what you work under? How many of you came in today and talked to me about what you think about yourself? How you're constantly criticizing yourself? How many of you go out in your work and you're overwhelmed? You're overwhelmed by, oh God, is this good enough? Is this not good enough? The boss doesn't like me. These people don't like me. Oh, I can't do this. I want that. That person, see? Roshi said, that's a miserable master. But it's a marvelous servant because I can use it to do things. See, I can use it to identify my shoes. See, it's a wonderful servant. I can make tea. I can talk to you. I can write poetry. I can paint pictures. So long as I'm not dominated by this, so long as this becomes that beautiful, clear, empty mirror, good friends, the Dharma teaching of mine is based on meditation and wisdom, but don't make the mistake of thinking that meditation and wisdom are separate. Meditation and wisdom are of one essence, not two. Meditation is the body of wisdom, and wisdom is the function of meditation. Wherever you find wisdom, you find meditation. And wherever you find meditation, you find wisdom. See, wisdom here could be prajna. And what is prajna? See, prajna, it is not some sort of a clever intellectual understanding. And that's what people keep seeking. I want to understand it. I want to understand it. You can't understand it. It's inconceivable. Buddha talked about that. And every one of these great masters have said the same thing. And yet, we can approach through that kind of understanding. We can bring that, see, into the focus of our meditation. See, meditation is what? See, he tells you here, meditation is the body of wisdom. What is the body of wisdom? This. Now, don't try to understand this. There's one of the great koans that I answered for Roshi. He said, raise prajna for me. See? And he approved it. See, but if you try to grasp that, if you try to conceptualize that, see, this is prajna. And how does this great body, see, function? We talk, we listen, see. And if I am in this state, see, with no distraction, this is meditation. See, and always this is what arises in meditation. Don't think. See, in the ruminating mind, the mind of duality, you can't grasp this. See, it cannot be understood. The other night, what was Mumma? See, it is beyond description. There are no characteristics that can describe this. What is this at the basic level? It is emptiness. There is this great movement. It's not annihilation. It's not extinction. It rises up, it settles down. And if I can stay in this state of samadhi, non-distracted awareness, and I can maintain, see, and what do the old masters tell us? That you have to stay in the state of samadhi 24 hours a day. Then a most amazing thing happens. You see through the illusion. You see through the illusion of birth and death. See, you enter into the eternal. Good friends, what this means is that meditation and wisdom are the same. See, this state here is it. Not up here, running around in the delusional mind. That's what he says. When I run around in this delusional mind, I cause a gap, a separation. When I do that, see, I bring up, see, the world of samsara. I pick and choose, then I pick and choose on the picking and choosing, then I pick and choose on the picking and choosing and picking and choosing, and I am lost. I tumble in confusion. Why and where are you confused? And the great Fayen said, to truly enter into this, see, this great emptiness, see, this place of not knowing, this place where you don't use your discriminating consciousness, and it isn't lost to you. It's something that you will remember the alphabet. You will remember your social security. You will remember your telephone number. But you're not driven by it. And some of you can be driven by it. We got folks in here who tell you, get a tune in your head and drive yourself crazy with it. Repeat a phrase over and over and over. See? And in a certain sense, that's the exaggerated state of what we do. How many of you go to bed at night and are so caught in the fantasy world that you continuously think about it, think about it, think about it, think about it, and you can't sleep? See, you're disturbed by it. That's when it's the master. But then it's a wonderful, wonderful thing when it's the servant. See, there is nothing outside of this great enlightened state. See, that's where misunderstood. They can say even delusion is enlightenment. Even delusion to the enlightened, to the unenlightened, it's just psychosis. He said, fellow students of the way, be careful. Don't think that meditation comes first and then gives rise to wisdom, or that wisdom comes first and then gives rise to meditation, or that meditation and wisdom are separate. For those who hold such views, the Dharma is dualistic. See, and this is how simple. Dogen says it. When we first sit down, that's the enlightened state. And if you could simply sit down and immediately, see, cut the attachment to the flow of discriminating consciousness, you're there. But for most of us, see, this is the gradual aspect. For most of us, we have an opening, we sit, we have the curtains pull back for a minute, and I see something. What do I see? This here. And if I can see this freed from the mind that is involved in calculations, see, I'm looking at the entrance to the great path. The old master says, where do I enter from? He takes his stick and he says, enter here. And one other, when they talk about it, says, do you hear that siren? Enter there. And the actual koan was, do you hear the water? Enter there. See? And to enter there means to simply drop it. See? And to be present. For those who hold such views, the Dharma is dualistic. If the mouth speaks of goodness, but the mind doesn't think of goodness, meditation and wisdom aren't the same. See? But if goodness pervades both the mouth and the mind, if what is external and internal are alike, then meditation and wisdom the same. Now what you're getting into, he calls it one practice samadhi. And that's awkward. And that's how Abel Porter, and I'm not saying that anything about it, because I think he's an amazing guy and he does wonderful things. But that's awkward. One practice samadhi. No. The samadhi of oneness. the samadhi of oneness. And some of you are right on it. You're putting your fingers right up next to it. Where is the samadhi of oneness? Don't think. See, don't be caught in the dualistic mind. See, be present, non-distracted. That's samadhi. Just here. Now, when I totally release into it, now, this is the samadhi of oneness. And he said, the one practice samadhi or the samadhi of oneness means at all times, whether walking, standing, sitting, or lying down, always practicing with a straightforward mind. Straightforward, right in front of you. See, if I talk about this and I try to see this, but I'm caught in my mind, I'm caught in the thinking mind. And you know, that's where, for us, where koan practice is amazing, because it shows us how easily we can be caught, we can be spun, we can go back into, see, the dualistic mind, the mind that experiences yourself as separate, the mind that sets up all of the fear, all of the anxiety. Remember, and he'll tell you this, and all the old masters, somehow the message has been failed as to get out. Buddha Dharma is to transform your life into a life of great joy. See, too much that has come out, particularly from where in the East, it's great suffering, grimness. No, no, no. See, no laughter. It is laughter. One of the great, I think it was Senge maybe, who did the artwork. And I forget which one, it was one of the old masters was saying, and he would draw these marvelous pictures. See, and you'd see this Hote type character, see this, some of them grim, and he'd say about the grim and the unsmiling Buddha is not a completely actualized. And then he would draw these characters, all these heavy duty figures sitting around, and then he'd have this little drunk guy laying down there with a big grin on his face, and he said, this is the actualized Buddha. See, what an amazing thing to be free, see, from the fetters of dualistic fear and anxiety, to experience your life as a joyful event. That's what Buddha Dharma is. And Paul Reps, in his introduction, is so brilliant in Zen Flesh, Zen Bones, where he says, the normal, ordinary life of ascension being starts out sweet. The children, most of them don't, it's not 100%, but those of us here can say this. See, when we're young, we can pursue all of this fantasies of pleasure that are going to bring us great joy. And soon enough, we realize that it's not going to happen. And even sooner than that, we leave that high energy space and we move into middle age. And it starts to slow down. And we begin to realize that all of the promise that we thought we held, all of the wonder, some of us by that time have already been through a marriage or two. See, we have failed. See, and even those who have great success, public, Owen Wilson tried to kill herself. Why? Why? See, it's slipping away. Paul Rep said, the ordinary life starts out sweet and ends bitter. What does the bitterness mean? It means that I shrink into old age, sickness, and death. No escape from it. See, that's the prognosis for everyone in here who stays in the world of samsara, who stays in the dualistic world. That's the best that you can hope for. That at least you can live a miserably long life. See, and it's always too short. Folks, that's depression or depressing. And it is depression, samsara. But the Buddha way, see, is not that way. That is the enhanced life. That's what they say, to frolic forever in a samadhi of bliss. What he's saying here, the practice of oneness means that at all times, whether you're walking, standing, sitting, or lying down, you always practice with this straightforward mind. This also is his mind of purity. Now, let me tell you, this is why we practice. This is why we have the support of this little sangha. See? And that's why even sometimes when I despair that, you know, we our numbers are so small. But what an amazing thing, the support. We will make an effort here that we will not make alone. We will fall into the flow of samsara and be hopelessly lost. But here you have what we call sangha. And we each lend, see, to the overall strength, the overall manifestation of wisdom. And how rich we are to have this wonderful opportunity. He says, don't practice hypocrisy with your mind while you talk about being straightforward with your mouth. If you speak about the samadhi of oneness with your mouth, but you don't practice with a straightforward mind, you are no disciple of the Buddha. See, no hypocrisy. What does this mean? This comes back to the amazing teaching of Maizumi Roshi of no self-deception. See, no self-deception. Do you want the unfettered, the emancipated life? The life, see, that transcends the illusory world of birth and death. See, then you cannot deceive yourself. It isn't a question of deceiving me. This is the beauty of Buddha Dharma. No self-deception. See, and here he talks about hypocrisy. See, if you're talking about Buddha Dharma, and in your own mind, you're still trapped in your greedy, little angry, self-serving world. Hypocrisy. No disciple of the Buddha. Empty yourself out. See, allow there to be no separation from the inner and the outer. You know, when we work on the breathing, I try to get you to see that state. See, as you inhale, empty and still inside, but you're not rigidly suppressing thought. A thought comes, you just say, there's the thought. Then you go back to it. See, and more, as that occurs, then this gossamer-type barrier, we can't really see, but you see there's sort of a membrane that makes you feel that you're separate. If we really surrender ourselves into the practice, that drops away. And where am I? I'm right here. Now I'm in the samadhi of oneness. And here's the neat trip. That is bottomless. It is endless. It is eternal. My teacher used to tell me in times like this, he said, Nyogen, even the Shakyamuni Buddha is still refining it. You play in an infinite playground. What a stunning revelation. And realize, folks, it's real. But it's all rests upon your shoulders. He said, simply practice with a straightforward mind and don't be attached to any dharma. He said, this is what is meant by the samadhi of oneness or one practice samadhi. Don't be attached. That means don't get into ruminating. Don't judge out here. This is very difficult. Don't judge what you see out here. He said, deluded people who cling to the external attributes of a dharma get hold of one practice samadhi and just say that sitting motionless, eliminating delusions, and not thinking thoughts are one practice samadhi. That's not it. And here is the conflict between what they call sometimes the silent illumination, which is clearly not. See, and there were those who would point to the northern school and the southern school. Clearly not. See, but there must be something. Just as today you can find all kinds of things. We know of practices where all you do is just rigidly fixate and sit there. That's not what it is. You have to sit there, see, totally alert and totally fluid, not trying to suppress anything. This is the great state of Shikantaza. And the greatest, see, exponent of this is the great Hongzhi. See, that even the Dogen Zenji refers to as that old Buddha. And one of the very few old masters that he doesn't have a critical voice. He simply says, that old Buddha. And if you read what he describes as his form of silent illumination, it's identical to the sixth patriarch, to the great Yang Wu, to the great Tahui, Fa Yang. This most amazing dynamic samadhi of oneness. He said, but if you practice in this other way, if you make yourself rigid and fixated, he said, a dharma like that would be the same as lifelessness, and that would constitute an obstruction of the way. And isn't that what we do? We make our practice an obstruction. It is so simple. Dogen Zenji says, do your practice, and if you can do your practice, you're enlightened. That means if your practice is to count the breath, that's all. When all of the ruminating thoughts arise, you simply go back. As soon as you wake up that you're lost in the thoughts, don't criticize yourself. And then don't try to make some sort of an elaborate understanding, an elaborate scheme of your delusion. See, Dogen says not one thought is worth a second thought. Let it go. Those of you who want emancipation, you have to trust. This is a place of great faith, that you are the way. Not faith in me. I'm not going to do anything for you. I'm a cheerleader. I'm a coach. Why? Because I was 27 years in the room with my teacher. You have to pick it up. And oh, most amazing, you are the one who can put it down. The way has to flow freely. See, allow it to free. What does the third patriarch said? The supreme way knows no difficulty. You are the supreme way. Allow this to flow freely. See, what is this thinking? There is this delusional thinking, but thought after thought is moment after moment after moment. This is the mind. This is delusion. This is the mind. This is the samadhi of oneness. This is delusion. When I count my breath, if I flow downstream with my egocentric thoughts, the moment I wake up, and I will wake up, that's why we practice, oh, I come back to my thought. When I come back to my thought, I immediately cut the attachment. And as I continue to practice in that way, see, my slipping off into my daydream world becomes shorter, and I begin to recognize it as it comes up quicker. And pretty soon, what happens? I see it coming, and I don't follow it. I can stay consistent with my breathing. People say, well, you know, Nyogen, I'm really in delusion, because I can count my breath, and my thoughts are still going. The split is starting. And then we encourage you to look closer at the counting. See, and then I count. And pretty soon, see, I simply am able to stay focused on the counting. And then in the background, there's this little bit of buzz. A thought goes by, but I stay with my count. And at that point, then we take away the entertainment of the numbers, and I follow my breath. And if I really am attentive, and if I am in this marvelous still state of samadhi, at some point, see, I drop the perception of separation with my breath. My teacher would say, allow your breathing to breathe you, and you will experience the most amazing breath. See, where there is nothing but this gentle flow of the breath. Exquisite, refreshing. See, it can recharge. It can wipe away the anxiety, the fatigue of the world of samsara. Deluded people are unaware, so they turn things upside down with their attachments. Again, reinforce, if you go back into your head, because you're not awake, and for those of you who are not all that familiar, ask yourself, what is the gamble? See, what is the gamble? The instructions are simply telling you, you have to deal with yourself. You have to deal with your deluded mind. And like he said, it's one thing to say, well, I can do it alone. No, unfortunately, we can't. Because the very thing that you're looking for is the thing that's doing the looking. The Hindus have a marvelous statement. They say it's round and rolling, slippery and slick. And you know you can play games with yourself. As a matter of fact, one of the most difficult games, some people know what it is. You can have an insight. You can have a valid experience. And you'll turn it into your delusion. Has anybody here has ever done any of that? Who is it I heard laugh over there? But it's true. See, this is why the marvelous coin, it has to keep pulling us out. Keep pulling us out of the head. Because if we see something, we immediately conceptualize it. And he's telling, don't do that. Don't do that. Trust the state of oneness. Good friends, the Dharma isn't direct or indirect. Here he settles it. It isn't a question of sudden enlightenment or gradual. He said it's people who are sharp or dull. I hope some of you are sharp. And unfortunately, it's your karma to have a dull teacher. I worked 27 years with my teacher. But again, be forgiving for some of us, because Joshu worked 40 years with his teacher. What a dull old thing he was. Actually, if you're not familiar with it, his enlightenment is considered second only to the Shakyamuni. He's one of the great giants. See, 40 years he studied with his teacher. My teacher died young. I had hoped to be able to study at least another 20 with him. See, for those who are deluded, there is indirect persuasion. See, this is, we're using the gimmicks. And all of the things that we use are gimmicks. Roshi himself said that about koan practice. It's a gimmick. And then he said, and this is the great tragedy, there are people who are teaching koans, koan practice, see, that have nothing but an intellectual understanding. We had somebody that was shocked. I said this the other night. I'm not trying to put down, not here, somebody who comes from another place, who was talking to me about koans and all these koans and wanting to practice koans. So I said, well, okay, you can look into this. And then, about how long do you think it takes to get through these? I said, well, the first one took me 4.5 to 5 years. And he went, what? And I said, well, because I'm very quick. The man who compiled the Mumon Khan, Gateless Gate, one of the great geniuses, took 8 years to go through the gate. See, well, I just thought I'd sit down and read a few of these and pound them out. And can I take a little test to see if I've got it? See, that's not what it is. This isn't a place where you're becoming a professional. You're trying to leave the world of suffering, the world of anxiety, the world of fear. And you're trying to enter into an enhanced life. See, truly, truly, this is the one thing I can say about this practice. It has made my life so rich. 38 years now, pushing 39 when November comes. Okay. For those who are aware, there is direct cultivation. Know your mind and see your nature. For those of you who are aware, see, direct cultivation. See, if we can't get it, we read the sutras, we do other things. But if you are aware, this is it, then direct cultivation. It means you sustain this, and you don't get caught in the drama of what you're looking at. Take care of what needs to be taken care of. If you have a flat tire on your car, get out and look at the wonder of life and the amazing thing that you're doing there. Don't curse your bad luck. Don't kick your car. I did that. I did the craziest thing, a flat tire. I got in, it was one of the only, and I pulled the choke and I pulled everything out and started kicking the knobs, broke them off. Then I couldn't start my car. I had to have it towed. See, what an amazing act of stupidity. See, I was on the Zen trip right then. And I knew, why was I so upset? It's going to flow naturally. Wherever you stand, make it a Buddha land. Have fun with it. If you're not trapped in the picking and choosing mind, each moment is the entire universe. And it's how you deal with that that says whether it's an amazing flowering of enlightenment or it's a miserable grind of samsara. Good friends, since ancient times, this Dharma teaching of ours, both its direct and indirect versions, have proclaimed no thought as its doctrine, no form as its body, and no attachment as its foundation. I think we should leave it at that. Let's take good care of it.